you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to The Phantom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zacher, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire. And I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette, who's an editor at Contently. We're also joined by one of our writers at Sci-Fi Wire, Brian Silliman. He is my guinea pig.
Yes, that's right.
All right, Emily, let's start with you. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's it.
Let's start with me.
What is your pin you're wearing?
I think I got this at Desert Island, which is my favorite comic store in Brooklyn.
Mm.
When I walked in, you just like zoomed in on the pin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you been up to this week?
Up to this week. Geeky? I wrote a terrible blog post today.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
Sounds great.
Sounds like me every day.
It was about, so I work in content marketing.
You said there was such a zest.
Yeah, I work in content marketing. I talk about like how brands show up at market, and I miss writing about movies and TV, so sometimes I pitch ideas, and this one got through. So I wrote about the great houses of Westeros as if they were brands and companies.
So what did you compare them?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is the Lannister house? What brand?
Uber, I believe. And the Targaryens are Gawker.
Interesting. Trying to make a comeback.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are the Snows?
The Snows, the Starks are Patagonia.
Right, the Starks, the Snows, what am I, yeah. Mind. Makes sense, the North.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, they're worried about the environment. They've been like pushed too far by the power.
Their dad's dead.
Yeah.
Yep.
Totally.
Cool. Brian, what have you been up to?
Well, you know, the struggle is eternal, to quote Count Dooku from Claudia Gray's new book, Master and Apprentice.
All right.
I just ruined the entire thing. That was the worst thing I've ever said. And he was never heard from again. I've been finishing a huge project for Sci-Fi Wire and doing some other bits and bobs and generally just, you know, living life.
You, like I said, you're my guinea pig because you watched all 21 MCU movies for a big old project.
That's right. And not just watched, but analyzed.
Yes.
Intensely.
Tell us about it.
What we did was we went through, we made a whole big list of characters, of heroes. Mm-hmm. Pretty much almost every hero that appears in Infinity War, some that don't, but will probably show up in Endgame, like Clint, right, and Valkyrie. And you approved that list.
Yes.
And then I went through every single movie and counted lines, no villains also. Thankfully,
right,
you took off Thanos, Ultron, Ego, people like the Whiplash.
I'm a benevolent leader. I'm like the Grandmaster.
Yeah, unfortunately, Justin Hammer, you know.
Right.
But, and we counted every line spoken by the character, sometimes broken up into whether it's easy, sometimes it's just a yes or a mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a bantering back and forth. For a speech, you know, I tried to feel where the cadences were and imagine the sentences or something like that. So, you know, Tony's Jericho speech is not just count as one line.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, trying to go as, you know, where I felt like there was a natural period or, you know, if it qualifies as a speech, it probably got 3 marks. And I'm doing all this on yellow pads with a red pen.
So it's kind of like sentence, not
yeah,
line.
It's by the sentence, sure, a line. I'm like, that would qualify as a line. It's sometimes, you know, a breakdown will say 5 lines, 2 speeches. And that means you actually have a paragraph in there or something going by, you know, SAG standards. but it's really, you know, someone would do the same thing and come up with different numbers. So it's approximate. It's what my heart was telling me. You know, what this feels artistically.
That's the way to
like
do math.
This is a line. Yeah, math is always so artistic and freeing. That's why I've always been so bad at it. But it wasn't just that. It was also you were interested in fisticuffs. Mm-hmm. So we're counting punches. We're counting kicks. We're counting times people attacked with a weapon. Could be a sword, spear, a random piece of metal, another person. And they don't necessarily have to connect. So if they're just, you know, Gamora swings a sword, that gets a tally. We were counting tosses. Every time someone tosses an item or another person, which happens a lot more than I thought, we're counting that. We're counting every time Thor throws his hammer, every time he hits someone with his hammer, every time he spins the hammer, every time Cap hits someone with a shield, every time Cap throws his shield, every time somebody else throws Cap's shield or hits someone with Cap's shield, every arrow from Clint Barton, every magic attack from Loki, Doctor Strange, and Wanda Maximoff. And there was a couple of and then there were special things like every Black Widow takedown, because she's, you know, there's no way to classify that. So that was a special thing, or a Wasp takedown, or Groot's branch bash, I think is why I couldn't think of something better. But when Groot just, you know, really goes nuts with his branches. Cool. And then there were Hulk smashes. When Hulk smashes, there were Thor smashes. And then there was the Hulk smash sequence where he goes on an extended Hulk smash that is impossible to properly count how many punches or whatever is in there, or at least I just didn't feel like it. So I'm like that, like when he slams Loki back and forth.
Okay.
Right. Like that is a Hulk smash.
Or smashes up the building.
Yeah, Avengers. Exactly. Okay. Something like that where I'm like, I can't, there's no way to distinguish. He just is general rampage. Mm. And there's more of those than I thought there would be. Hmm. And then, we were not counting, which is important, anything with guns.
Okay.
Any gunshots, any bombs. So characters like Rhodey and Falcon and Rocket, who are primarily, you know, gun-based characters, they don't have a lot. It looks like they only talk, but they have, especially in it, like they're bombing and gunning the crap out of everything right. all the time, you know.
I felt cheap, you know, to like just, oh, you got a gun, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, also that would have killed me, because if I was sitting there counting gunshots and no laser shots, so every Peter Quill laser shot, don't care. Oh. Every repulsor from Tony Stark and War Machine, thankfully left out, because also there are about a million of them. Mm. And how to differentiate if he's levitating with it or if he's using it to fight, that would have been a whole, you know, I'd still be working if that was the
thing. I think what we wanted to convey was, who's like the physically toughest?
Yeah, it was an interesting experiment, because you know you see that some characters really talk with their fists,
right?
And some just
like me.
Talk. Like Tony Stark, far and away, talks the most in the entire MCU. It's not even a contest.
So when you were doing Tony Stark stuff, talking about his lines,
yeah,
how often did you break speeches up into multiple lines?
It happened often. I mean, it's not just him. I mean, Cap has speeches too.
Right.
But the thing is, Cap is a little more stoic, and sure. he doesn't have as much lines. He has more gravitas, and he's generally more slower. The same with Thor, until you get to Ragnarok, in which case Thor starts all of a sudden talking really fast, and he's really funny.
Yes.
But it's like, it's will somebody please slow him down, because I am losing my mind here. I can't keep up. It's very hard when Tony and Pepper are talking, because they're improvising a lot, and they're talking over each other a lot. And so it's, did I just miss a line there?
Is that a healthy relationship, Tony and Pepper?
I mean, Pepper really doesn't have an arc outside of Tony.
Sure.
So artistically, no.
I think they make sense. Like I think the dynamic works for them.
He needs her.
Yeah. And she kind of like, you know, I think she gets off on being like a sub to Tony. But with another man, she would get annoyed, I think.
How funny is it that like how her life has changed? So we talk about like how this movie like kind of revived Robert Downey Jr.'s career and changed everything. Yeah. But for Gwyneth Paltrow, the last thing she needs is Marvel movies now.
Yeah.
She became like a goop billionaire.
It's true.
Anyways, what surprised you the most? Like what numbers surprised you the most to see?
Tony Stark's lines were something over 2,000.
Damn.
That surprised me. And that's no matter how you break up speeches or whatever, it's in the 2,000s. That surprised me. Cap comes in second. I forget what the number is. But he also, they both are tied for appearances in movies. They're both at 9 appearances.
Right. No,
nobody beats them. I think maybe Fury was also at 9.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody has more than 9. And we're talking, that includes PSAs and Spider-Man Homecoming. That includes the post credits of Ant-Man. Even if, and where Steve only has one line, I think he's in there. Captain Marvel doesn't say anything.
What about
still counts
when Loki is doing an impression of Steve in
that Dark counts as a Loki line.
Yeah, he had very good answer.
That was
for that.
That's actually, yeah, that's important. It's when Loki is impersonating Odin, mm-hmm. that counts as a Loki line. If he's impersonating Steve, that counts as a Loki line. That was hard with Captain Marvel because it was only the second time I was watching it, and I had tallied up Coulson lines,
right.
And I had forgotten that, but you know, I imagine if they're listening to this, I've already seen that, but it's that he was being impersonated. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, let's go back and cross that out. Now my beautiful sheet's all ruined.
Does he only have one line as actual Coulson in that movie?
He had about like 7.
Wow.
Like I tried to really like each give him like, cause I'm a huge Coulson fan, mm-hmm. and I missed him on the, as much as I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I do, and I, but I love seeing him back. But he has, especially. It was slow though. It was really only 4 until that scene where he brings the case of eyes to Fury.
Oh, right. Yep.
That you know, he has. I gotta stop saying you know and all these things. It's becoming a thing.
You know,
but he has more there. Fury was kind of running away with it too. I believe he has more in that movie than he has in any other movie.
Yeah, I'm looking at Fury stats now. So he has 148 in Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
He only has, and you know, he pops in at the end of some movies, right? So he's not a big part of a lot of them. You know, the Avengers, he has 114 lines.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier, 83. Overall, he only has 438 lines.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Oh my it's God! He kind of
he also kind of disappears in Phase 3,
right?
But so does Tony in a lot of ways. I mean, Tony also hijacks other people's movies.
Right.
Tony hijacked
Spider-Man Civil War.
That well, he doesn't run away with. I mean, Spider-Man blows everyone away in just that one movie. It's out. He has something like 400 lines or something in that movie. Hmm. Doctor Strange also talks a lot in his movie, whereas with Captain Marvel. Did not have a line number that was comparable to that. She's a lot more stoic and a lot more, you know, well, let's just go do this instead of speeching. And she a lot less, you know, quippy, which I think is, well, she gets her digs, but she's
the
more
the quips aren't that good.
Yeah.
If there's a quippy character like Peter Quill, who outdid Black Widow in 3 movies, well, she had 7 movies, he blew her count away with just 3 appearances.
That's
Black
interesting.
Widow has 463 lines.
Yeah, and Quill had at least like something like 500 or 300.
Let me look
in
at
Guardians 1 and 2. The number was almost the same.
Well, I mean, he's the protagonist in 2, right? And she's never the protagonist.
I will say Scott Lang has 606 lines in 3 movies.
Yeah,
he talks fast.
He goes on and on, but they're short. Like a lot of them are short little lines, so it's not like they're speeches.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Quill has in Guardians of the Galaxy 203, in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 205,
right,
and Infinity War 92.
Yeah, he had a lot for Infinity War, and that's a lot because even someone like Steve Rogers only had about, you know, something like 20.
What a weird like moment Chris Pratt had. Now everyone's kind of over it. He was like, everyone loved him in Guardians of the Galaxy.
And by the time Volume 2 came around, everyone was done.
Yeah.
I think his politics came out between those movies.
The politics, the religious stuff, and the divorce.
Yeah, so they kind of like shuttered him back
and
a little
bit. Think it's like, oh, he's an actor and that's a persona. That's not really him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's not really Andy Dwyer.
Right.
You know, God, if he was.
I
think he changed too, though. I feel like he probably changed as a person. Never get into like celebrity gossip, but I feel like Chris Pratt was, he used to live in like a van and work at like a Margaritaville. I don't think he was like always super religious.
Now he's always in camo on his Instagram.
And he got buff.
Talk about Christ.
Yeah, that's why I'm not getting buff. I don't want to change.
I will never get buff. I will make that promise to every lady listening.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're a ladies only listener podcast.
Yeah, it's at least that's, you know, that's my prime audience. But
Bruce Banner is 472 lines in 7 movies.
He
and
makes
that includes
for,
Captain Marvel. With
wait,
though.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, where he's I don't think he talks in Captain Marvel, but he is there. but he was one of the Incredible Hulk was the easiest one to count because Ed Norton does not have a lot of lines in that movie. And he was the only character I was counting aside from Tony Stark has four lines at the end of it.
Huh.
So that movie was a little easier because he has a lot of winsome stares and a lot of pathos and stuff like that and moments of what am I gonna do and it's all inside and it's so dramatic and I'm like, oh, you're not talking. I'm like, that's great. Whereas if we were counting William Hurt in that movie, forget about it. He talks a lot.
Do you?
If we were counting Hank Pym, talks a lot.
There's
certain characters I was just, thank God, These people are not on the list.
It's so strange that Michael Douglas is in these movies and so big in them too. It wasn't just like a paycheck role. He's a big role in this.
He's huge.
It wasn't like Anthony Hopkins even.
He's the only one explaining the plot.
Anthony Hopkins has probably one scene in Ragnarok and then is dead.
Yeah.
It blows away.
And even like the first two movies, he's on it that much.
Not that much, yeah. He kind of does his bit. He has his best, I think his best Odin moments in the first one.
Sure.
Thor says, but I'm king. He goes, but you're not. Not yet. It's hard to do into the microphone. I really want to scream it, but that's my favorite Hopkins moment.
I gotta rewatch the
also
Thor
the sequence. Hopkins. I have to say, does a great rewatching. It reminded me of this. He does a great job when of playing Loki, playing him, which is something I'm always impressed that actors can do when they're not there. And it's something Tatiana Maslany is better at than almost anybody because when she's playing a clone impersonating one of her other clones, that's just next level. And that's only one of the million reasons she's a genius. And that show is so great. I had to get that in there. But but when Hopkins is impersonating Loki at the end, Loki's impersonating Odin. But it's Hopkins at the end of Dark World. He has a great moment where Thor is going to give the hammer back. He goes, it's yours. It's always been yours.
Right.
And it's a really touching scene. And then you realize who it is. And then at the beginning of Ragnarok, just the oh shit. Shit. Oh no.
So
it's
good.
We were already flying with Ragnarok. It's like, oh, I thought that was just your head. It's a crown. You know, it's, and all that. So it just continues the Ragnarok streak. I will say that they were, you know, it was a longer thing between counting all the stuff, and I should show you the photo of my copious yellow pages of pads and red tallies and everything and H's and shield throws and P's for punches and everything because it was I spread it all out on the floor after I sent the document to it, and I swear to God it makes me look like some kind of crazy conspiracy theorist, but about something that doesn't really is of no stakes in the real world.
Well, tell us about the fighting, the punches and kicks and stuff.
Yeah, it's we were talking about that before. It's interesting. You have a character, Winter Soldier, for example. Which that was a hard movie to count because that is, I have one section that I put brackets around it. It's because it's nothing but P's, W's, and K's, which punch, weapon attacks, and kicks. And it was a steady amount, and it was all from the elevator scene alone. It's just wall to wall like that. And he doesn't use the shield there at all. And then there's a moment with Tony and Tony Winter Soldier and Steve at the end of Civil War. They're a big back and forth fight. There's a shield toss. There's a punch that got rewound or whatever.
I was
saying this to you before. Yeah. The hardest scene of all was the airport,
right?
Because where every character in that scene is being counted, they're all fighting each other. They're all quipping at each other. I was going line by line. I was like second by second skipping through that. I'm like, that was the hard. I thought beforehand, I'm like, I think that's going to be even harder than Infinity War because they're all fighting villains in that. It's really spread out. I was dreading Civil War, and I was right because that was that was the worst. But anyway, to go back to what you're talking about, like Bucky, he doesn't even when he's Bucky, you know, himself in his natural time, he doesn't talk that much in First Avenger, which is still one of my favorites of the whole MCU. But when he becomes Winter Soldier, he very much speaks with his fists, like he is the Terminator. And it's been Winter Soldier and then in Civil War as well. Mm-hmm. And he's has very few lines, but he just has so many fisticuffs. It's unbelievable. And it's because he never stops going. And that's not even including his multiple array of guns. Like he has a low fisticuff count in Infinity War. It's because he's using a machine gun most of the time. A character, but whenever he's constantly punching with the arm, he's one of the only characters that can throw the shield right back. That it's rare for another character to have a shield toss. I think it's him and Natasha both had them. Certain characters definitely, Widow actually, you know, gets a lot of fisticuffs. We talked about this in the Ant-Man and the Wasp podcast, mm-hmm. which I guess will be coming out soon. But whereas Scott Lang has about double the amount of lines for a movie with shared, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp, you'd think right. they'd be equal. But he has like two or three punches or something in that movie, and that's it. The rest of it's all comedy. She, on the other hand, has a list of kicks and rolls and Wasp takedowns and everything else.
She's like, the enforcer of that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it may, but looking at all this, it made me want, first off, it made me want a Gamora Nebula. If we're going to do a prequel, like I think that would be an ideal one.
Yeah.
Like the two of them young, because mm-hmm. their scenes really stuck out in Guardians to me. And not so much in Guardians 1 when they're fighting, because it was just counting sword movements and that was tedious. But in the second one, where he's like, all I wanted, you were there, but I just wanted a sister. And I had said that Yondu had always kind of stole that movie for me, but this last round it was Nebula who kind of stole. And it's not just that it's Karen Gillan. It's not just the Doctor Who fan in me geeking out, you know, but I would love a young Gamora Nebula spinoff or something. If you're going to do a prequel, that's, or even not, I mean, assuming they both live, mm-hmm. a movie about them when they're not talking about, you know, Quill or even Thanos or anything else. What do they get up to?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, would be, and because to have two women talking to each other, you know, in one of these movies is insanely rare. It happened probably in Captain Marvel and weirdly enough in Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't off the top of my head remember another moment where that happens.
Was the Iron Man 3 between Rebecca Hall and
yeah.
Pepper?
Yeah, it's the one. Yeah. And it's a really good scene.
Yeah.
It's, and I generally think that's a good movie, but it's there. Rebecca Hall is talking, you know, we all do bad things or whatever. It's one of the only Pepper scenes that's non-Tony related.
They destroyed her role in that too. She was supposed to have a big part in that.
Yeah.
Oh, Rebecca Hall?
Yeah.
Because is it true that it was because they were like, well, we can't sell villain toys if it's just a woman in a dress?
I'm not sure. I mean, that sounds accurate. I'm not sure the reason why. I mean, the third movie has a great villain twist.
Yeah.
For sure.
Great? Oh, God, I hated it. You're talking about the Mandarin?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But I was like, are
Ben
you
Kingsley
kidding me?
Act like a doofus was great.
You can't.
Well,
I mean,
how old was I when that came out? What
12?
Year was that?
I don't know.
I was not like, oh, Ben Kingsley. I was just a random Marvel fan, you know.
I understand not liking the twist, but the performance is joyous.
Yeah.
Sure.
Who doesn't love Guy Pearce?
But I would stake a good amount of money on most Marvel fans being disappointed.
Interesting.
I don't think most Marvel fans were like, and now Ben Kingsley nuances. Like,
I just thought it was a funny twist to do midway through the movie. Just all of a sudden the villain's not the villain.
To quote him, I never saw it coming. I did that.
You watch these movies really closely.
It was I was already liking the character, and then he was already good working as the villain, and then he comes out having more fun than I think he's ever had. And
makes a lot of bad movies.
Like, and I did a lot of drugs, and I was on the street, and they got you off them. They gave me more, you know. And so it's just it's madness, and Tony just watching it like, what the hell is this? It was wonderful, but
hard disagree, but you know,
It's fair. Cool. A lot of people do. I'm like,
we can respectfully disagree on the fandom.
Totally,
files.
Totally.
I, you know, nothing makes me happier than when Rockwell's Justin Hammer says bird in the MCU. Probably even like maybe only Peggy Carter comes above that. But it's just, what are you talking about? There's a gotcha the bird. It's a great bird. Look at this bird.
That is a good scene.
It's like,
yeah.
Come on, you know, Ivan, you know, I'm trying to be nice. I gotcha the bird. You know, it's I'm a sucker for that. But one thing that I will say, we were talking about this a little before the podcast. It is very clear that it's no shocker that there's, you know, an imbalance between male-female roles in the MCU. And it's 21 movies. One of them has a female protagonist that is named after that hero, where she doesn't even come close to touching the numbers that the other, that the male heroes have in their movie. And people are making videos of cutting up her action figure because in 21 movies, there's one. Like, I was just, come on. And you know that, and that's no surprise to anybody. But when I broke down the numbers and I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, this is, it's incredible when you're looking at the hard data. And yeah, there's approximate and room for error and all that. But the numbers are just too big, especially Scarlett Johansson in 7 movies gets blown away by some of these guys in just 3.
Yeah. You know,
to say nothing of other representation that just isn't there at all.
Hopefully in the next phase, I feel like we're getting closer towards it. We got Black Panther, Captain Marvel, you know, we'll have some.
That's they, what happens
they said,
in
you know, we yeah. gotta, that's why I want, you know, we gotta have a, you know, bring in Kamala Khan, you know,
sure.
It's, mm-hmm. And if, I think, you know, in terms of LGBTQ, there's nothing. So if they redo X-Men, you know, that seems like some prime ground to do that. It's hard because you have these characters as they exist in the comics and you're sure. adapting them faithfully. And we all know what happens if you swap genders or races in certain
people
characters.
Love it.
People go, oh, they absolutely loved it in Fortastic or whatever that was called.
Fortastic.
And it's, I get it. But now that this phase is over and you know, I feel a little like Thor in Ragnarok. I don't want to get preachy and soapboxy. It's hard not to. But when he's like, I'm glad there's an all women fighting force.
Oh,
he's like,
yeah.
It's about time. It's like, I don't, you know, it's, I don't mean to be all that. It kind of sounds like that. But the numbers are, you already knew it. And then I looked at the numbers. I'm like, wow, this is, it's something that the number one thing I'd say needs to be worked on. Because even in a movie like Ant-Man and the Wasp, where she theoretically is a title character, you know, have a quippy, have someone quippy, like talking like Tony Stark. I mean, there's got to be that equivalent.
Darcy from the Thor movies should have more lines. She
I mean,
be involved more.
She would have had a lot if it was counting. I'm glad we didn't count her.
Yes,
she talked a mile a minute.
She's pretty panned as well, though.
I liked her.
That's the thing. With
that mouthy broad.
Casting, not counting the love interest, would have even, if we did count them, would have evened them out a little bit. But they so exist, really. None of them have arcs outside of, I mean, Jane has a little bit of one. Rachel McAdams in Doctor Strange doesn't have much of one. That's one thing where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of, the show excels at, where the movies don't, is because it's packed with that.
Emily, your favorite character is Loki.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite Loki line?
I mean, it's got to be Mule and Quim because it's as close as they could get to him calling her the C word. I love that scene with Natasha because they both use the same tactics and they both have a kind of very feminine energy. So I like seeing anytime Loki runs up against an intellectual rival is fun.
Are you excited for the Disney Plus series?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to take place, is going to be a prequel or?
Yeah, I kind of see it as like, in my mind, I would love a younger man to play Loki and Tom Hiddleston is doing voiceover, like occasionally.
Like a Wonder Years type deal?
Yeah, like a Wonder Years.
I'll never forget the day Thor showed up.
Or if he's a voice replacement.
But it is Hiddleston. They did confirm that, right?
Yeah,
that
I know. It's kind of like, I don't know. Like, I love Hiddleston's Loki, but he is getting older. He was so beautiful and like elfin looking in the first one. And I think that Loki, in my mind, he has to retain that quality of like otherworldly. He looks kind of boyish, but feminine as well. I'm excited that they're doing a series, but I can't really imagine what it's going to be.
Yeah, I can't either. It's as much as I'm excited for those series, I'm also, like I've already said, there are other characters I would rather see mined.
Like Chris O'Dowd's character in Thor 2.
Yes, an entire series.
Yeah.
And he works
on different dates.
He works on an IT department with Richard Ayoade.
Right, yeah.
I would watch that show.
That was a good idea. They should do that one day.
They should make that show. It's right, and he talks like this all the time. That's a terrible impression.
And our first guest is Varsha Sharma. She is the managing editor of Now This News, and she's talking about something I would say more serious now than what she's been talking about throughout the entire day, this day of the Mueller report. Now, this is the real stuff.
Yes, this is the real important stuff. I mean, this is what I've really been waiting 11 years for. So, you know, Mueller, I've only been waiting 2 years for that.
Well, you know, he's, you know, you might refer to him. Some people might say he's a superhero, a bit of a Captain America square jawed himself. So it works.
Yeah, I mean, people love to Photoshop him into Avengers memes. It's true.
Yeah, it's very weird. And in any case, let's not talk about him. Let's talk about these movies. When we reached out and we asked people on Twitter to talk about Avengers movies, we were told that you can't be in the same room as Chris Evans. So let's talk about that, this Captain America love.
Yes. Let's talk about that. My husband's going to be thrilled. he's a big DC fan, huge Batman fan, has a Batman tattoo. But he even says the Captain America trilogy is probably the best superhero trilogy after the Dark Knight trilogy. See, even he can admit that. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, when I think about Marvel movies, I don't think of any of them as like a trilogy or a series. It's all like one big giant thing.
Yeah, they've really done that with, I think, Civil War and Infinity War. But prior to that, it felt like they had some trilogies, some chapters.
Sure.
So are there contenders for other great superhero trilogies? I mean, if that's number two, then...
I mean, the Spider-Man ones, Sam Raimi's.
Those are great.
Spider-Man. Iron Man, if there are big Iron Man.
The first Iron Man trilogy is solid. Yeah. I think the Thor trilogy is, you know, is solid. Yeah. I would agree, though, that the Cap trilogy is hard to beat.
Tim Burton's first three Batmans are great.
Brilliant movies. I think First Avenger never gets enough love.
Yeah. Were you a Marvel geek before getting into these?
I was, yeah. So I'm, you know, I was a huge nerd growing up, surprise. that includes, you know, the Marvel comics, Harry Potter. But it really was, I was very much into Sam Raimi's early Spider-Man movies, as you mentioned. But it really was sort of the first Iron Man in 2008 and then the first Avenger, where I was like, oh, the MCU is doing something huge and unprecedented and different. And it's actually really good.
So what is it about the man himself?
I think... he's so consistent. I think he has both shown the most growth and development over the movies. I think, you know, the only person who ties him for that is probably Iron Man. But he's also incredibly consistent. And I like that about him. While he's totally earnest and pure and good hearted, he's not afraid to, you know, use language, except for that like one Joss Whedon weird script writing moment that happened. But since then, you know, he's totally snarky, he's funny, he's entertaining, he's a man out of time, but he keeps his principles from the 1940s to the 2000s. And I respect that.
Ryan, you just watched every single Marvel movie, a lot with Cap. Have you seen him develop over time?
It's interesting. A lot of these movies start with a very selfish male learning like the power of sacrifice. Iron Man, Doctor Strange, Thor, you know, a lot of them start that way. The interesting thing about Steve Rogers is he's already there in that first movie. And we wrote about this in the best scenes, you know, it's why my favorite scene in First Avengers is Grenade. Because even when he was scrawny, he doesn't hesitate to jump on it. He is already the guy that makes the sacrificial play from moment one. And so seeing him develop from there is even more interesting. It's because, yeah, he, you know, gets all these powers and everything, but he starts, as they say, that movie as a good man, you know. So that's what makes him fast. And taking that and then putting him out of time where he's playing catch up is just endlessly entertaining.
What I also think is awesome is that they took the guy literally named Captain America, who is, you know, supposed to be the ultimate patriot, and they turned him in Winter Soldier into the character who is totally suspicious of the government, of the U.S. government, of their authority, of what they're doing with surveillance and weaponry. And I think that's awesome. They took a man who is the ultimate patriot out of all of the original Avengers, and they made him question governmental authority. So I think that story arc was also very interesting for him, and obviously it continued into Civil War.
And what's interesting is that he became very, you know, skeptical, but he never became really cynical, right? Like that sort of like do-gooder character. It's pretty cool that Chris Evans was able to keep him interesting for all those years, and, you know, the directors and screenwriters as well. But to make him interesting after two movies, if it wasn't a very good performance, you'd be so bored of the guy.
Something I wasn't expecting. I've always liked Chris Evans, but when you hear he was doing the part, you're like, what? And then from moment one, it was just in the bag with him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also interesting when you say, you know, he was, you know, with values and challenging those values. I think he has two lines in the second two movies of his trilogy that stand out where he says, you know, this isn't freedom, this is fear. You know, and he's not waving a flag, but he's still standing up for the ideal versus the reality. And then I think it's in Ultron where he says every time someone tries to win a war before it starts, people die every time. You know, so he has this wisdom.
Man, you watch these movies closely.
Yeah. Yeah,
I also feel like any time there's a war, people die. That's kind of a
People
a weird
also
logic.
Die in actual wars too. Yeah,
it's, no matter when the war starts, people die. Like,
so, Versha, what do you think about Bucky? I think that's like a real to me. When I was watching Civil War, I was like, all right, you guys are not Civil War, Winter Soldier. I'm like, you're doing a lot for this one guy. I feel like you're causing a lot of trouble for this one dude. What is your take on Bucky Barnes?
Well, I have a coffee mug that says it's not Adam and Eve, it's Bucky and Steve.
Yes.
So that might tell you what I think about them. But, you know, I love their friendship. I love the loyalty that Steve Rogers has to Bucky Barnes. I love that moment in Winter Soldier where Bucky's mask flies off and Steve sees him for the first time in decades. And they have that moment and Bucky's like, who's Bucky? Like, who the hell are you talking about? But you can see, and it's also credit to Chris Evans acting, how shook Steve is by this whole experience, subsequent conversations, how he feels about it. And I totally buy it. Like, I can, you know, I could see why you might be skeptical. Like, Cap is doing too much and going into Civil War, essentially choosing Bucky over Tony Stark. That's a pretty huge decision. But when you go back to the first Avenger and you see how Bucky supported him from the very beginning, when he was the little guy, when he was getting into all these fights in the alley, you totally understand like why he has this loyalty. And again, that's a true character trait of Steve Rogers, is that kind of loyalty.
What would you need to see in Endgame to feel like Chris Evans got the right send off, a satisfying send off?
Oh my God. Okay. There's so much. I mean, obviously I am 100% terrified that they're going to kill him. Mm-hmm. That, you know, as much as it might make sense for the story or for his character arc, as a stan, that's going to hurt real bad. Mm-hmm. But I think what would make sense, and I feel like they're hinting at this, and I hope if there is time travel involved, we get some version of it. I want to see something where he gets some kind of closure with Peggy.
Yes.
I love his relationship with Peggy, and also again there, his loyalty to her throughout the years. And I think it's really notable that they use her voiceover heavily in some of the Endgame trailers. And it seems really significant. And it seems like she's hinting at a story where they might try to go back in time or use a time stone or via the quantum realm, we don't know, to try to change events as they happened. And that seems like it could present an opportunity for Steve and Peggy to have some kind of interaction. Mm-hmm. Then I feel like I would get some nice emotional closure there.
I am with you on that to the end of the line.
Yes,
I could not possibly agree with you more. That is exactly what I want as well.
I don't know if they'll be... if they would actually do this for us, but you know, as cheesy as it might be, I would like to see them actually get that last dance together. Aww. That would be nice.
Yeah. I see it.
Shivers.
What if they leave him in the past with her? Well, that, I guess
so
that would remake things.
Yeah.
Time travel would be difficult.
That's pretty much the only way I'm okay with him, quote unquote, dying. If they go into the past somehow and he ends up just like staying in the past, which is some very Dr. Whovian shit, which I also love.
Same.
That would probably be the only death that I'd be like, okay, I think I can accept that.
What if Bucky dies?
If Bucky dies, I would be really surprised. Because I thought they were setting up Sebastian Stan to like maybe take over Cap's mantle in the next movie. Huh. I don't know. Because he has like a 9-movie contract or something. Oh. So I think he's got more to go, but I'm not sure if they're renegotiating. So I would be surprised both for contractual reasons and for character reasons. And again, I think it would be absolutely heartbreaking, but I could also see it kind of closing the loop when Bucky sacrificed himself in the first Avenger for Cap. And I think an underrated scene between Peggy and Steve in the first Avenger is when she's trying to comfort him after he thinks Bucky has died. And she says, do you respect your friend? Do you trust your friend? And Steve is like, yes, of course. And she says, then give him the dignity of his choice. Mm. He chose to stand beside you in battle. And what happened to him is unfortunate, but he chose that. So let him die with honor, which is what, you know, they thought happened. And then at the end of the movie, when he is taking the jet down with the Tesseract, and she's trying to tell him there's another way, Steve says, this is my choice. Mm. And so I feel like the theme of choices, in addition to sacrifice, is a huge one for Steve, Peggy, and Bucky. So I could see, you know, I could see any one of them dying, unfortunately.
It's so funny the way that we base our speculation, at least in part, on contracts and, you know, things like that. Like the sort of stuff that comic book fans, they never had to worry about. And then even just movie fans 20 years ago never had to worry about. But we're so informed now. And it, like, it shapes the way we think of these stories.
I know. I wish we didn't know that. As much as I loved the bold storytelling and choice at the end of Infinity War, as soon as I saw Black Panther turn to dust, I was like, oh, this isn't going to stay. Right. Like, yeah. They're going to reverse this somehow. Like, this isn't real.
I'm curious, like, with the Spider-Man Far From Home trailers, they, like, don't acknowledge the fact that he got dusted.
Yeah.
Should they, like, forget about it or what?
He's still brushing it off.
Yeah.
You know, just like, oh, don't worry, don't mind that, everybody. Zendaya, I'm fine. Anyway, France, huh?
So when are you planning on seeing the movie?
Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. Oh, very excited.
Awesome.
And I've already got my tickets for the second showing on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's smart.
Wow.
That's smart.
I almost went for round number three, but I'm going to wait and see how the rest of my week shakes out.
This is a long movie.
Yeah.
It's not there have been other long ones, though. Everyone's making a big deal about 3 hours, but
sure.
You know, all the Lord of the Rings movies were 3 hours,
Gandhi.
And people dealt
with
it.
Yeah, I mean, I would have taken 4 hours. Like, I would, you know.
Why do people want less? It's like, give me five, give me six, give me 2 hours of just Steve and Peggy having, like, a 2 hour long date and show me the entire conversation. Why do you want less of this thing?
I feel like this assignment broke your brain.
It did. And it's your fault. It's my fault for accepting it.
That's wild. Yeah, 3 hours isn't too bad. I think just given the sheer number of characters, you know?
Yeah. They've got a lot to wrap up.
I wouldn't mind seeing another, like, Cap solo movie, but I feel like having him with the group, I'm fine with
the ending. Dynamic.
Yeah. I could see another, it was somebody else behind the shield. Like, either Bucky or Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bucky makes more sense. Or it could be someone completely different that, you know, from the comic. I just know that's what they did in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Versa, what do you think? Do you care about, like, the character or, like, Chris Evans' portrayal and the, you know, do you care about, like, the Captain America name and the costume so much, or just, like, Chris Evans doing it and, you know, Steve Rogers?
Super passionate about the Steve Rogers version of Captain America, and I agree. It seems like the most likely outcome is probably Bucky picking up the mantle. But yeah, I think, you know, again, Steve Rogers in the comics and also the way that Chris Evans has portrayed Steve Rogers in the movie, there is something very special about him that makes him, you know, the perfect Captain America. And maybe it's just the perfect first Captain America. But I do think he just sort of embodies everything about that role so well. And you know what? I'm also okay with Captain Marvel leading the franchise if that's where we're going. I'm pretty excited for Brie Larson to step up and excited to see where her character goes as well.
It'd be great if the movie was just like her showing up and beating Thanos in one punch and the rest of the movie's like them just hanging out.
And then even more, like 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know, in lieu of real friends, just go see this movie and these are your friends now.
Yeah, we definitely broke your brain. All right, Versa, thank you for doing this. You know, for taking time out of what is undoubtedly one of the biggest days of your year to talk to us about the most important story of all.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Now we've got Tom Caswell, who is he's a one-time guest already here on the Phantom Files. It's like being on SNL. You're a one-time host. You're welcome back. Mm-hmm. And 5 times you get a jacket.
Absolutely.
Tom was on for the Power Rangers episode, but he's also a big MCU fan. And so we have him on. He answered our Twitter call, and we were happy to have him here. Tom, what's going on?
Doing good, my friend. Can't wait. Just 1 week away now. I feel like I should be more pumped, but I think I'm just a little bit more terrified, really.
What are you terrified of?
Oh, I'm terrified that all of my all of my favorite heroes are going to be dead in a week's time.
God, what a sentence.
All of the heroes that have already died.
My father, my favorite teacher.
In but a week's time.
Who are your favorite heroes that whose death do you fear?
Sure. I feel like the inevitable death that we're going to experience no matter what is Tony. I think that his arc is definitely coming to an end, and that it is almost a perfect fit for him to kind of, you know, this whole MCU has kind of been about his atonement for his sins and all the new sins that he keeps racking up in trying to fix his old sins of the past. So yeah. I feel like him sacrificing himself in some way is really going to kind of be the touchstone that Endgame needs to end on. However, I have a theory that all six original Avengers are going to bite the dust.
Wow. Tell us about this theory, because that's insane.
I think that there's a reason there's six Infinity Stones and there's six original Avengers. I also think that pretty much all of their story arcs are kind of complete at this point. I would say that we're unlikely to get another Iron Man or a Captain America film. We're obviously getting a Black Widow movie of some sort, which I fully expect to be a prequel.
Even though she's like 10 years younger?
Yeah, well, she's like 12 years. I think that Scarlett Johansson can pull it off. I mean, she pulled off in Ghost in the Shell, so she can pretty much pull off anything, I guess. But I just think that, you know, obviously some trickery is going to happen where, you know, Peter comes back and T'Challa comes back and all of these characters that were dusted somehow make a return. And for it to have any weight, you know, there needs to be like a swap, right? These characters that we've loved for all of these films, I think needs to maybe go out to pasture, all six of them, in order to bring in the new guard and have like some kind of passing of the torch. So I think it's inevitable that Tony dies, but honestly at this point I kind of think that they're all gonna bite the dust.
So like, all right, so Tony I can see dying, right? He sacrifices himself. Everyone kind of thinks Captain America is gonna eat it, right? So honestly I love Thor the most, so I hope he stays alive just for own selfish reasons. But in terms of Black Widow, I mean, we can see Hawkeye dying, right? Like, who cares? Black Widow and Hulk, those two, how does their arc ends? What's a satisfying ending for them? Like, together? Is that what it is? Like,
making out.
Yeah, do they die?
What a weird arc they've had, too.
Yeah. What is for them, what's a perfect ending for Hulk and Black Widow?
I don't know. Like, as cheesy as it is, I always kind of liked, and you know, Age of Ultron has kind of a ton of problems, but I did like the idea of them introducing a romance between the two characters and them relating in both being monsters, just of different natures. Mm-hmm. And the sun is getting real low. Like, that's not only been featured in Age of Ultron, but that obviously that was like a joke in Thor Ragnarok. Like, they haven't just kind of dropped the whole Natasha and Mark Ruffalo, Bruce Banner have this chemistry. So, you know, maybe as they're passing on into the afterlife or whatever's going to happen, you know, they have that moment of she's like touching his hand and she's like, the sun's getting real low. And then, you know, they fade into light or whatever the fuck's going
to
happen there.
he turns the Hulk mid-sex.
He could be cured. Dies. That's the thing. He could actually be cured and able to have sex, because he can't have sex in Incredible Hulk. He can't get too excited as much as Liv Tyler wants him to. And he says it again in Ultron. He's like, what? I can't really think about it, Natasha. I just can't do it.
Like, what if that's the death?
What if he practices with Sting, like tantric sex, and so he's able to do it because he doesn't get too excited?
Banner,
like,
does that. Dies? That's half of this movie, is Banner and Sting. Hulk goes away, but if Banner remained but just can't be the Hulk anymore, and then you know, him and Natasha are hooking up fast and loose every which way.
Just all
and then
over
you
the place.
Could still do the Black Widow movie, but not have it be a prequel.
That's an idea. Mm. It's technically the death of the original Avenger, because Hulk would be dead.
Sure.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom?
I think that the most interesting story that is left to tell with Natasha is some of the Red Ledger that allude to in every film. They always allude to like some mission she did or some stuff in her past. And we, don't necessarily have specifics. Age of Ultron is the closest we've ever really gotten to learn about Natasha's past. And so I just don't think, I don't know what a Black Widow movie after Endgame looks like, especially after like her facing Thanos. Like, I imagine whoever she's going to go toe-to-toe with in the Black Widow movie is going to be a way more street-level villain. You know, so how does that character go and do something that's not going to be on the scale of Endgame after this facing off against Thanos? And I also think that with Hulk, as cool as it has been to have Bruce Banner and you know, have this kind of really great performance from Mark Ruffalo, he's always been, you know, like a B-side character. He's only had one movie, and that had Ed Norton in it. And I just think that, like, the most useful thing for these characters, for the MCU as a whole, would for them to, again, sacrifice themselves in some way, or for them to have an ending here. Because going forward, the Black Widow movie, I'm not going to say it rubs me the wrong way, but it definitely feels like it's coming
but he's
a lot later
it.
Than it should have.
Sure. Right, yeah.
And, oh, sure, yeah.
And, you know, so if it is kind of, if it is taking place chronologically, you know, post-Endgame, are we going to get a Black Widow 2? Probably not. Like, this movie is like a token movie. Like, oh, here's Black Widow's movie. We should have gotten around to it. Here it is. So I just feel that, like, if we are going to get a Black Widow movie that takes place after Endgame, it's going to be starting a new narrative arc for Natasha. And I just don't see that being something that they're going to want to continue in the MCU. Whereas if they did like a nice little, here's some backstory to Natasha's past, here's how she transitioned from being a Russian KGB to S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, let's give some more context to her motivations and her backstory. I think that just makes way more sense. And that means that they can do a good Black Widow movie, but then not have this expectation going forward that this is going, you know, Black Widow 2, Black Widow, Serpent Society, all these fucking, you know, sequels and stuff.
Here's my pitch for Black Widow. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No movie. It should be a Disney Plus series.
Yep.
A prequel series.
I completely agree.
But it's made with footage from The Americans, the FX show, and they put Natasha into it.
It's kind of like the bobblehead on top of Carrie Russell.
She's like in the background of it all. And so you see her.
Oh, it's just The Americans.
Yeah, The Americans with Natasha in the background. So you slowly watch her, and they cut up all the different scenes. So it's all the Russian stuff. So you see her like as a spy.
They shoot the story of The Americans. Like they shoot the whole series over again, but it's just from like a different, like from Natasha's perspective.
Disney owns Fox, like, baby.
Or she can just top and tail each episode. It'd been like, when we last saw our heroes, they were doing this. And then at the end, wasn't that a doozy? Like they used to do for Twin Peaks. And she can just hold a log for no reason.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thinking that Disney needs.
Yeah,
I think.
They're bereft of creativity.
Yeah, it's like they need some fresh blood, much like the Avengers, I guess. Yeah. I'm not ready to lose Thor, though, selfish reasons, because I need another Waititi.
Yeah, Taika,
Thor.
I saw some news story that he's like got it ready, like Thor 4 today.
Well, they just like a Thor prequel.
How do
they
not ideas.
Hopefully they don't screw it up and call it like Thor. Like, you know how they do that with, I hate that.
Thor.
Like lucky number 11, you know, Thor. It's like, Thor. Just call it Thor 4, for God's sake.
I know that we all want it. I know that like on paper, a Taika Waititi directed fourth Thor film sounds awesome.
I believe you mean Thor.
It's hard to say it. Like, honestly, like saying Thor is just easier. On paper, I think it sounds good. But again, it would be kind of restarting a new narrative arc for Thor that I just don't think.
What
the
if it's
Marvel
him in the afterlife?
Valhalla.
He's a god.
The movie.
Yeah.
Then you could get every. Well, I mean, also, we didn't see Lady Sif.
True.
In the last movie.
R.I.P.
I wouldn't mind getting some, you know, some Lady
it's
Sif.
It's amazing. Finally, Jane dumped his ass, and Lady Sif is not there to take advantage.
Yeah.
Right.
And
sorry.
I think that with Tessa Thompson's performance as Valkyrie in Ragnarok, and clearly she's going to make an appearance in Endgame in some fashion, it seems, I think that a much better and bolder decision than a 4th Thor film would be a Valkyrie film.
That's a good idea.
But her, like, I think during her time on that planet, junk planet, where she's just drunk as hell.
Sekar.
Yeah, and there's just no, there's like nothing ever really happens.
I think having flashbacks to her time, you know, after fighting Hela and losing her way and all of this, certainly. But I think that, hey, Asgardian society, you know, we know that there are some Asgards left because Thor was like, he only got rid of half, you know. I think that her being thrust into a position of leadership, you know, she, in a lot of ways, like you could almost reshoot Thor's. I mean, not to say that you'd want to have a remake of Thor in Dark World, but you could do like a, now it's Valkyrie's turn to kind of learn how to be a leader with, you know, in theory, if Thor is no more after Endgame, have her kind of be, everyone's turning to Valkyrie as this, you know, the leader of Asgard.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Yeah. If they're relocating Asgard in that Norway, you know, continuing the Asgard as a place, not a people thing or whatever, do you think, like, kind of what the comics did where Jane became Thor for a while? Obviously, Natalie, I would be really surprised if Natalie Portman became Thor. I mean, I would also love it because I'm like, now Padme is Thor. I'll be like, I am there for that. But that doesn't seem likely because she seems done. But what if, do you think Valkyrie would be a contender to kind of wield Stormbreaker and, you know, wield the power of Thor next? So we kind of have Valkyrie, but we also still have the power of Thor in a weird way. Do you think that would work? I'd be down for that.
Yeah, it's something that I definitely considered when I thought about like the possibility of a Valkyrie movie. However, like, I think that there's a lot of issues with adapting Jason Aaron's Thor books where Jane Foster is Thor into Valkyrie's storyline, because, I mean, you could just do a loose adaptation where it's like she is now the female Thor.
Yeah.
But the Jason Aaron books about Jane Foster as Thor, like, are so much about that version of Jane Foster. Mm-hmm. Like, it has everything to do with her, you know, being a mortal who is going through chemotherapy for her cancer treatment, and, you know, being the goddess of thunder at the same time.
Yeah.
So I do not think there is any way they bring Natalie Portman back. I just don't see it happening. I also just don't think that would be good storytelling, like, for her to just be like, oh, now I'm Thor.
I want them to go and bring Chris O'Dowd back.
Oh, yeah, for that
scene. I think that's Chris O'Dowd is the new Thor.
Yes! I would watch the hell out of that.
I pretty much just need someone to keep throwing a hammer around. You know, someone, that's all I really want. And Tessa Thompson, you know, Valkyrie can stay Valkyrie and doesn't have to change her name to Thor. I just want her to be throwing a hammer. I'm a man of simple needs.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for doing this. When have you seen the movie?
That's a very good question. So I was up at 7:55 a.m. to get tickets that day. I had just moved into my brand new apartment, so I didn't have internet. So I was solely working on the AMC Theater app, praying that my AMC A-list would work and that everything would be hunky-dory. And then after like 10 minutes, it was clear that AMC did not have their shit together for tickets. And so I ran to my local coffee shop. I had my computer open, I had my iPad open, I had my iPhone open with multiple apps and multiple like website windows. I even went to adamtickets.com. Like, do you know how desperate I was to get fucking tickets to go to Adam? So I ended up getting, I have to go to fucking Coney Island to see this film. So I have tickets to see it at the Sheepshead Bay United Artists. I'm seeing it in Regal Prime Experience, whatever the fuck.
Oh, that's
that
actually
is.
Really good. RPX. Those are good screens.
Because here's the thing.
I love it.
I think I've been spoiled by the Dolby at the AMC theaters. I know for a fact that whatever this is, it's just not going to be as good as that, but I'm sure it'll be fine.
How long of a trip is that for you?
If I take the subway, I think I have to go into Manhattan and then go back down. So it's going to be, because I'm in Brooklyn right now and Coney Island's in Brooklyn, but to get there, you have to leave Brooklyn to come back. I think if by train, it's going to be at least over an hour. So I think I'm going to treat myself.
God.
I think I'm going to treat my girlfriend and I to a lovely Lyft ride. Right. Which should only be a half hour to 45 minutes, depending.
Both well, ways.
On a Friday, on a Thursday night, I'm sure it'll be a real zip.
Yeah. But the important thing is I am seeing it at 6 p.m. on the Thursday. So I do have, like, one of the first showings. So I will be seeing it before a lot of people. So that, you know, I can't complain.
That's right. What the Regal Premium Experience is all about. They're not paying me, but they should.
Let me tell you about our new sponsor on this podcast.
This is brought to you by Regal Premium Experience.
When the Fandom Files has the episode where it's like fans of the theater experience, I'll come back on and talk Perfect. About how RPX compares to Dolby.
For the motion smoothing episode of the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Coming out soon.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
I'll be on to rant about that for sure.
Alrighty. Tom, thanks so much. All right, and now next up, another returning Fandom Files guest for his second episode. We got to start getting ready to print those five-time jackets.
Print them?
3D print them.
I'm ready for Excuse my me? One-time jacket.
Yeah. Print. You don't print your clothing? Anyways.
What a loser.
3D print your clothes.
I 3D print my underwear every morning. You don't?
I had this idea that we should probably introduce him because now we're just talking about my ideas for like how you could put stuff over your clothing so it wouldn't get dirty and you could wear it again.
Let's include him.
Yeah. Eric Villas-Boas. Thanks for being here to talk about MCU and not 3D printing clothing. How's it going, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we spoke very briefly yesterday, and you mentioned being a big fan of the big guy.
Yes, the Hulk he's one of my favorite comic book characters ever. I don't even know if he's my favorite Avenger, but in the MCU, he's my favorite character in terms of how they eventually molded him into a really interesting character when he started out as a really lame and not very dynamic character kind of in the MCU. Like if you'll remember, like in the Incredible Hulk movie that Edward Norton was in, like it kind of landed with a bit of a thud. It didn't really, like the character wasn't that interesting and people didn't really care about, I think, that movie and still don't care about that movie to this day. And then like Mark Ruffalo kind of took that character and like, I think the movie that this like this fully kind of expresses itself in, I think, is Thor Ragnarok, where, you know, like he kind of like took that character to the next level, and Thor Ragnarok is where you really see that interplay between kind of like the Bruce Banner side of him and the Hulk side of him, because Hulk actually gets like a more of a personality and gets more a little bit more pathos. Another thing I really like about Thor Ragnarok is, you know, it also takes a lot of cues and a lot of and pays a lot of homage to this like very classic, you know, sort of recent Hulk story, Planet Hulk, written by Greg Pak in that, you know, it came out in the comics as like this massive storyline in the mid 2000s and into the late 2000s. And it's very much kind of like the story of Hulk in the movies, right? Where like he eventually goes off into space and then has to kind of like find himself by being a gladiator and then just like kind of owning his hulkiness as opposed to constantly like having to cage himself inside. So I thought that was really cool.
One of my, I wouldn't say shames, but secrets, not even secrets. I've never seen The Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton movie.
Yeah.
It's the one MCU movie I haven't seen, let alone haven't seen multiple times.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, I should.
It's the least of them, but it's still better than the Ang Lee Hulk, I think.
How?
It doesn't take much.
Yeah, I mean, like, so Edward Norton, I don't think anyone's like a huge fan of his work in that movie.
I was going to say in general?
No, I like that work.
Yeah, it's fine, but Ruffalo's a better fit.
I
saw it on my first date, so I'm clouded.
Ever?
Yeah.
First date ever?
With like, you know, in a high school movie when it's like the guy, like the Jordan Catalano, it was that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
How long did you guys date?
It was just out. A very fiery 2 weeks.
You guys couldn't agree on whether you like the Hulk or not.
I just remember that was like what was out. It was, but it's funny looking back because the MCU began when I was 17, 18, yeah. You know.
I can't remember anything from The Incredible Hulk. Like I know that the Abomination is like the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I think they have some fight in Harlem maybe, but I think I only remember that because they make a joke about it in one of the other movies. Like, I can't remember. I couldn't tell you specific scenes or anything that happened in the Edward Norton Hulk movie.
They do.
So let's talk about Ruffalo then, because obviously, and it's not just his fault that, you know, it's not just Edward Norton's fault that the movie didn't do well. But what does Ruffalo bring to the table, especially as the movies go on, that you think that you find so, and I think everyone finds so great?
I think he brings like a real humanity to it. I think whenever he's playing the, you know, the Bruce Banner side, he always brings us like, you know, like this constantly frumpled or frazzled look about him, you know, like there's that like one, that great line in the Avengers where, you know, like my secret isn't that I get angry, it's that I'm always angry. And then like he transforms. I think that's like a really smart kind of take on the character. And I feel like in the MCU, like that's usually the take, right? Like where he's like holding back this repressed side of him all the time. And then also has like, you know, there's a bit of an inferiority complex too, because he's surrounded by all these like smart people or really strong people, like either like Tony, who is super smart, and there's a tension there. And then also in Thor Ragnarok, you see Thor, who is like super strong, and they have like a, and the Hulk side of him has, there's like an interplay there, and there's a tension there, you know, who's the strongest or who's the coolest Avenger or whatever. I think there's a lot of humor there. I think there's both humor and humanity there, where you didn't get that from, or at least I don't remember it from Edward Norton. I don't want to dump on Edward Norton too much, because I love him too in other roles, but I think Ruffalo nails it.
I love at the end of Thor Ragnarok when he's fighting the big dude that's going to destroy, you know, Ragnarok.
Oh, Surtur.
Yeah, Surtur. He's fighting him, and he's like not smart, right? Like that's the thing about Thor, you know, Hulk, he gets dumb when he's doing it, even now he can speak. And Thor's yelling to him, Hulk, no. And he's like, big monster.
Big scary monster.
It's such a great line. It like encapsulates that entire movie in a way. The way, like, even then you like feel bad for him. That's Ruffalo being very dumb as Hulk.
I agree that like that dorky bewilderment he plays so well, but every now and then he gets kind of a badass line in Ultron. He has the line that I love. He goes, go ahead, piss me off. You know, I think the Scarlet Witch, he's like, I'll break your neck right now and won't even change a shade. It's like, whoa, where did that come from?
Well,
it's like,
I'm curious. And I mean, not even in the, I know like his backstory in comic books, but why is he so mad in the MCU? Because Ruffalo seems like such a chill dude. Mm-hmm. And he is like, it seems like he's an environmental activist. He's a good guy. And like, what is it? And again, I haven't seen this one MCU movie I haven't seen. What gets him so mad in the original Incredible Hulk that he gets like super pissed off and that makes him angry all the time?
Well, he can have sex.
Well, yeah. Okay.
There's that. I mean, there's probably a lot of sex. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that's the only reason. It's partially why, I think.
Imagine if half the series was driven by blue balls.
I mean,
kind
of. Like, part of it. It's like Liv Tyler wanted to have sex with him in that movie and he couldn't.
I mean, he also... He says he tries to kill himself, right?
Right.
Like he does. Yeah. He kills himself.
It's you know, and all this was brought on by something he brought on himself. It's, you know.
I mean, you could be naturally angry, right? Like you don't need necessarily a reason, but I've always been curious, like what is the thing that makes Ruffalo's Hulk secretly, quote unquote, always angry?
In the comics, I think there have been multiple storylines where they've tried to like kind of explain it out where like, you know, it's either like, oh, like, you know, his dad beat him when he was younger and like that's where the anger comes from, or like, you know, other shit happened when he was younger and that's where the anger comes from. But I don't know. I can't remember the MCU getting into that more, like, again, like, you know, I can't remember the Incredible Hulk, so it might be in that movie.
I don't think but. It is. I'm also not sure that we're meant to take that line as literally as it's saying. I think of it more as, that's my secret. I'm always, not necessarily angry, but always ready to be the Hulk.
Right.
This is something I'm continually holding back on purpose.
Right.
So it's not a problem to let it free. And the payoff there is wonderful. In Infinity War is all of a sudden he needs that and doesn't have it. And I'm just assuming that in Endgame, you know, Hulk comes out again. I think it would be really weird if that kept going on.
What if he died because he just couldn't get it out?
That was the only line, I think, in Infinity War that hit me a little too literally, where he's like, you and I have some issues to work out in the second film. It's like, okay, yeah, we got it. But, you know, it's a long movie. One line. It's pretty good.
I wouldn't say Hulk is my favorite Avenger, but I think Mark Ruffalo might be my favorite of the people who play Avengers.
Yeah.
He's great. He's one of those actors that's great in everything.
Right?
He's so sweet.
Yes.
I love. Let's just say thank you, Mark Ruffalo.
Thank you, Mark Ruffalo.
Thank you, Mark Ruffalo.
Thank you, Mark Ruffalo.
I'd love to work with you one-on-one.
On like we're acting or
yeah
okay
wink. Like a play no, on there's one. No wink although kind of a wink, wink. A play a
I'll
movie
see you on the
television
basketball
show
court.
I will see you on the ice my friend and we'll 3D oh, print our hockey jerseys before we go.
Eric, when are you seeing the movie?
I'm seeing it the Saturday right after it comes out. I was one of those people who bought a ticket as soon as they went up and then got mad because the Alamo Draft House, their like website went down. So I had to buy it elsewhere, but I bought that ticket like an hour after, you know, they went on sale basically.
Are you seeing it at the Regal Premium Experience?
You know, I considered it, but no.
That's too bad. You could have had the Avengers themed horse and carriage escort you there.
So last question.
From your home.
You're gonna have to spend all of Friday and part of Saturday avoiding spoilers. What are you gonna do?
I'm just not gonna be on the internet. I'm gonna try to not be on Twitter as much as possible. It's probably like it. I would assume it's like, you know, most of Thursday too, because probably comes out the night before or something. I don't know.
I'm seeing that shit on Tuesday. I'm gonna spoil everyone.
I need to just not be on the internet at all next week. All next week, just blackout.
Yeah, I'm going to be blackout drunk all next week.
All right. No spoilers.
I'm going to stick my head in a toilet for an entire week, and it will not be the first time.
Eric, thank you so much on that note for being on the show. Enjoy your screening.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
For our final segment of the week, as always, I like to call it Fan Fiction Corner in my head, but... you know, you can call it what you want. It's the point where we have someone read their fic.
We could give it a name.
Not this week.
What's wrong with Fanfic Corner?
It's a little, I don't know. I wish it was more clever. Anyway.
Maybe if we gave it a theme song.
Fanfic Corner.
Welcome, come on down. Come to Fanfic Corner. I just ruined it.
Our guest this week is Emily Jezorski. Jezorski?
She just told us before
I
the
know.
Show.
I got it.
You got it,
nervous.
Guys. You're awesome.
Welcome to the show. Emily has a podcast of her own. It's called the I Ship It Podcast, and she is reading a piece from a friend of hers. Why don't you take it away?
So this is called Darcy's Really Awesome Harem Adventures, a folktale by Luis by Emma98.
This is great.
Summary is Loki challenges Darcy to a harem off who can build it bigger, better, and buffer. Luis recounts the tale of how Darcy got her groove on and on and on. So Thanos was finally whooped good, and everyone totally came back to life and were 100% okay, and no one died or lost any more limbs or eyes or anything, and the big battle actually kind of sort of put a lot into perspective, you know? Especially around the general butt-hurtedness of Tony Stark and Captain America. However, in the crazy, oh my god, we're alive, and we won, and now what do? Euphoric aftermath, a few things were missed by everyone. Number one, Shuri and Peter somehow managed to obtain two of Dr. Foster's portal devices and put them in their bedroom closets. So far, they'd spent the last 3 months using these ridiculously high-powered transportation machines to have epic slumber parties in Queens and Wakanda with their assorted friends. Number two, Pepper Potts had stopped drinking caffeine. It was kind of a big deal. Number three, Peter Quill changed the shape of his goatee, and he was still sulking in the universe out there that no one had said anything. Number four, Loki and Darcy became friends, and according to Dr. Banner, this is signaling the start of another apocalypse. Number five, Bruce Banner changed his tea blend, which really gave him a different way to... Hold up. What? Jane looked up from the report of the self-appointed Avengers information liaison had handed her. The moment she'd landed from the Bifrost, she'd been handed a sheet of paper from a man she barely recognized and began to read this very long memo. I use Grammarly, so it should be totally tight, you know, as far as grammar goes. Luis defended himself. I mean, I was an art history major, so I totally think I'm allowed to use a word aid to get my writing up to par. And when I give my writing in my updates in writing instead of written form, spoken form, I'm less likely to get a weapon pointed at my head. No, the grammar is, I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's good. Jane shrugged. She pointed at number four on the list of 52 items. What is this about? Oh, right, yeah, well, I mean, Loki's in Norway, which technically, you know, that's where your big kahuna went to while you came here, Louise reminded Jane, although by the way she was blinking at him, he doubted she was thankful for the help. But, I mean, for a while, before the Asgardian started that colony in Norway, Darcy and Loki, like, bonded? Oh, no. Jane whispered.
The end.
Oh my God. That was so many layers.
Oh, it can end there.
I love the Louise impression.
Yes.
You also do a very good Natalie. This is weird, but you do a good Jane Foster impression.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was
guys.
A thing.
My God. So if people want to read more of that fic, which obviously I do, where can they find it?
They can find it on archiveofourown.org.
Of course.
It's the top of Emma's page, which is her name is Emma 98.
Nice. Cool. Wow, how'd she score that screen name? That's a good one.
I don't know.
Seriously.
It was already taken by the time I got there, yeah. I'll tell you that much.
All the Emmas born in 98
there were 97 people before her.
Damn it.
She went through the whole thing. She's like, one, no.
Emma, two.
Like, at least I'm not Emma 4036.
It took all day.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was really
fun. Thanks, guys. This was so fun.
All right. And that does it for this week's epic episode of The Phantom Files, almost as long as the movie Avengers Endgame itself.
Epic. Mm-hmm.
And Brian peed himself 12 times.
I did, and I regret nothing.
It's only an hour.
You know what? People ask me how I pee sitting doing this podcast. You know what the answer is? Just like that.
Well,
no, you could drink this. You could drink
joke.
This water. You could drink this water. It's perfectly good.
Yeah. Brian, how can people find you on the internet?
On the internet. Okay, in real life, nowhere. On the internet, at Brian Silliman on Twitter, BrianSilliman on Twitter. And I think on Instagram it's the same, although I don't really take it. I posted like a whole story of most of Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull last night. That's how seriously I take Instagram. So,
so you just pirated the entire movie well, for was, 24 hours.
Well, no, I was trying to, I was doing the voices along with it and then inserting my, it was really dumb. So if that sounds appealing, check that out.
Did you save it as a long-term story?
I might. I think there's interest from Paramount.
Yeah.
But Twitter is mostly where I'm at and look for me on Sci-Fi Wire's webpage.
Yep.
Always new things popping up there all the time. Look up Sci-Fi Wire Brian Silliman and you'll see a whole lot of stuff.
Once people can figure out Google, they'll be all over it.
Yeah, just a Google Alta Vista web crawler.
Emily, how can people find you?
I'm Emily G Monster on Twitter and I'm Jordan Zacharin on Snapchat.
Yep.
Are you really?
No.
Because that would be,
wouldn't surprise me.
That would be amazing.
Send me nudes.
That wouldn't surprise me if you did that. And I just didn't know
I'm Jordan
about it.
Zacharin on Tumblr.
Oh, nice.
It's just very Etruscan.
It wouldn't surprise me if you did that, and I just didn't know it, and it was like an ongoing joke for like 7 years.
What a joke.
Yeah. People, yeah. Anyways, I'm at Jordan Zacharin on Twitter. We are at Phantom Files Sci-Fi on Twitter. We've been doing okay with the tweets.
I have so many tweets scheduled for 420.
You do.
Oh my God.
And we are also on iTunes, which is where we're on all the Twitter. We're all on all the podcast platforms, but especially iTunes, where you can give us 5 stars. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Enjoy Avengers Endgame. And we will talk to you next week at the funerals of your favorite characters.